Chapter 37. Imre Stand. The sun still stood more than its own height above the jagged western horizon when Ruark said that Imre Stand, where he intended to stay for the night, lay only a mile or so ahead. "Why are we stopping already?" Rand asked. "There are hours more daylight left." It was Avienda, walking along on the other side of Jiaden from the clan chief, who answered, in the scornful tone he had come to expect. "There is water at Imre Stand. It is best to camp near water when the chance presents itself."
"And the peddler's wagons cannot go much farther," Ruark added. "When the shadows lengthen, they must stop or begin breaking wheels and mules' legs. I do not want to leave them behind. I cannot spare anyone to watch over them, and Culloden can."
Rand twisted in his saddle.
Flanked now by Jindo Dwade Madian, water seekers, the wagons were making heavy going a few hundred paces off to the side, lurching along, raising a tall plume of yellow dust. Most gullies were too deep or too steep-walled, forcing the drivers to go around, so the train twisted like a drunken snake. Loud curses floated from the wavering line, most blaming the mules for it all. Kadir and Kylie were still inside their white-painted wagons.
"No," Rand said, "you don't want to do that." He laughed softly in spite of himself. Matt was looking at him oddly from under the broad brim of his new hat. He smiled in what he hoped was a reassuring way, but Matt's expression did not change.
"He's going to have to take care of himself," Rand thought. "Too much is riding on this."
Speaking of taking care, he became aware of Avienda studying him, her shawl wrapped around her head, much like a shufa. He straightened himself again. Moraine might have told her off to nurse him, but he had the impression the woman was waiting to see him fall. Doubtless she would find that funny, Aiel humor being what it was. He would have liked to think she simply resented being stuffed into a dress and set to watch him, but the glitter in her eyes seemed too personal for that. For once, Moraine and the Wise Ones were not watching him. Halfway between the Jindo and the Shido, Moraine and Egwene were walking with Amis and the others, all six women looking at something in the Aes Sedai's hands. It caught the light of the falling sun, sparkling like a gem. They certainly seemed as intent as any girl on a pretty. Lan rode back among the Gaishine and pack horses, as though they had sent him away. The scene made Rand uneasy. He was used to being the center of attention for that lot. What had they found more interesting? Surely nothing he could be happy about, not with Moraine, likely not with Amis or the others. They all had their plans for him. Egwene was the only one of them he really trusted.
"Light, I hope I can still trust her."
The only one he could really trust was himself.
"When the boar breaks cover, there's only you and your spear."
His laugh was a touch bitter this time.
"You find the threefold land amusing, Randall Thor."
Avienda's smile was the merest flash of white teeth.
"Laugh while you can, Wetlander. When this land begins to break you, it will be a fitting punishment for your treatment of Elaine." Why would the woman not let up?
"You didn't show any respect for the dragon reborn," he snapped. "But you could try finding a little for the Kara Karn."
Ruark chuckled. "A clan chief is not a Wetlander king, Rand. Nor is the Kara Karn. There is respect, though women generally show as little as they can get away with. But anyone can speak to a chief." Even so, he sent a frown in the direction of the woman on the other side of Rand's horse. "Some do push the bounds of honor." Avienda must have known that last was meant for her ears. Her face went stony. But she strode along without saying another word, fists clenched at her sides. A pair of the scouting maidens appeared, coming back at a dead run. They were plainly not together. One headed straight for the Shido, the other for the Jindo. Rand recognized her, a yellow-haired woman named Adeline, handsome but hard-faced, with a scar making a fine white line across her sun-dark cheek. She was one of those who had been in the stone,
though older than most of the maidens there, perhaps 10 years more than he.
The quick look she gave Avienda before falling in beside Ruark, an equal blend of curiosity and sympathy, made Rand bristle. If Avienda had agreed to do the Wise One's spying, she certainly did not deserve sympathy. His company was not so onerous as that. Him, Adeline ignored altogether.
"There is trouble at Imrestand," she told Ruark, her speech quick and clipped. "There is no one to be seen. We have kept hidden and not gone close."
"Good," Ruark replied. "Inform the Wise Ones."
Unconsciously hefting his spears, he dropped back to the main body of Jindo. Avienda muttered to herself, plucking at her skirts, obviously wanting to join him.
"I think they already know," Matt said, as Adeline sped toward the Wise Ones' party.
From the agitation among the women around Moraine, Rand thought he was right. They all appeared to be talking at once. Egwene was shading her eyes, staring at either Adeline or him, her other hand to her mouth. How they knew had to be a question for later.
"What kind of trouble might it be?" he asked Avienda.
Still muttering to herself, she did not answer.
"Avienda? What kind of trouble?"
"Nothing."
"Burn you, woman! You can answer a simple question. What kind of trouble?"
She flushed, but her reply came in a level tone.
"It is most likely to be a raid, for goats or sheep. Either could be herded at Imre for pasture, but most likely goats because of the water. Probably it was the Charin, the White Mountain Sept, or the Jara. They are closest. Or it might be a sept from the Goshin. The Tomanel are too far, I think."
"Will there be fighting?" He reached out for Sidene. The sweet rush of the power flooded him. The rancid taint oozed through him, and fresh sweat burst from every pore.
"Avienda?"
"No." Adeline would have said if the raiders were still there. "The herd and the Gaishin are miles gone by now. We cannot recover the herd because we must accompany you."
He wondered why she did not mention recovering the captives, the Gaishin, but he did not wonder long. The effort of staying upright while holding on to Sidene, of not folding up and being swept away, left little room for thought.
Ruark and the Jindo swept ahead at a run, already veiling their faces, and Rand followed more slowly.
Avienda shot him impatient frowns, but he kept Jiaden to a brisk walk. He would not go galloping into someone else's trap. At least Matt was in no hurry. He hesitated, looking at the peddler's wagons before cantering Pips up. Rand never glanced at the wagons. The Shido fell behind, slowing until the Wise Ones began to move again. Of course, this was Tardod land. Culloden would not care if someone raided here. Rand hoped the clan chiefs could be gathered at Alcair Dahl quickly. How could he unite a people who seemed to fight each other all the time? The least of his worries now. When Imrestand finally came in sight, it was something of a surprise. A few widely scattered clumps of long-haired white goats browsed on patches of tough grass and even the leaves of thorny bushes. At first, he did not see the crude stone building set against the base of a tall butte. The rough stonework blended in perfectly, and several thorn bushes had taken root on the dirt-covered roof. Not very big, it had arrow slits for windows and only one door that he could see. After a moment, he spotted another building, no larger, tucked onto a ledge some 20 paces higher. A deep crevice ran up to the ledge and beyond, from behind the stone house at the base. There was no other evident way to reach the ledge. Ruark, standing openly 400 or so paces from the butte, with his veil lowered, was the only Jindo in sight. That did not mean the others were not there, of course. Rand reined in beside him and dismounted. The clan chief continued to study the stone buildings.
"The goats," Avienda said, sounding troubled. "Raiders would not have left any goats behind. Most are gone, but it almost looks as if the herd has just been allowed to wander."
"4 days," Ruark agreed,
not taking his eyes from the buildings. Or more would remain. Why does no one come out? They should be able to see my face and know me.
He started forward and made no objection when Rand joined him, leading Jiaden.
Avienda had one hand on her belt knife, and Matt, riding behind, carried that black-hafted spear as if he expected to need it. The door was rough wood, pieced together from short, narrow planks. Some of the stout bracing was broken, hacked by axes.
Ruark hesitated a moment before pushing it open. He hardly glanced inside before turning to run his eyes over the surrounding country. Rand put his head in. There was no one there.
The interior, light streaming in bars through the arrow slits, was all one room and plainly not a dwelling. Just a place for herdsmen to shelter and defend themselves if attacked. There were no furnishings, no tables or chairs. A raised open hearth stood beneath a sooty smoke hole in the roof. The wide crevice at the back had steps chiseled into the gray rock. The place had been ransacked. Bedding, blankets, pots, all lay scattered across the stone floor amid slashed cushions and pillows. Some liquid had been splashed over everything, the walls, even the ceiling, and had dried black. When he realized what it was, he jerked back, the power-wrought sword coming into his hands before he even thought. Blood. So much blood. There had been slaughter done here, as savage as anything he could imagine. Nothing moved out there except the goats. Avienda backed out as fast as she went in.
Who?
She demanded incredulously, her large blue-green eyes filled with outrage.
Who would do this? Where are the dead?
Trollocs, Matt muttered. It looks like Trolloc work to me.
She snorted contemptuously.
Trollocs do not come into the Threefold Land, Wetlander. No more than a few miles below the Blight, at least, and then seldom.
I have heard they call the Threefold Land the Dying Ground.
We hunt Trollocs, Wetlander. They do not hunt us.
Nothing moved. Rand let the sword go, pushed Sidene away. It was hard.
The sweetness of the power was nearly enough to overcome the feel of filth from the taint, the sheer exhilaration almost enough to make him not care. Matt was right, whatever Avienda said. But this was old, the Trollocs gone. Trollocs in the waste, at a place he had come to. He was not fool enough to think it coincidence. But if they think I am, maybe they'll grow careless.
Ruark signaled the Jindo to come in. They seemed to rise out of the ground. And some time later, the others appeared, the Shido and the peddler's wagons and the Wise One's party. Word spread quickly of what had been found, and among the Aiel, tension became palpable. They moved as if they expected momentary attack, perhaps from each other. Scouts fanned out in every direction. Unharnessing their mules, the wagon drivers looked around jerkily and seemed ready to dive under their wagons at the first shout. For a time, all was a stirred hive of ants. Ruark made sure the peddlers lined their wagons up on the edge of the Jindo camp. Culloden glowered, since it meant any Shido who wanted to trade had to go to the Jindo, but he did not argue. Perhaps even he could see that might lead to dancing the spears now. The Shido tents went up a scant quarter mile away, with the Wise Ones, as usual, in between. The Wise Ones examined the inside of the building, and Moraine and Land did as well. But if they reached any conclusions, they told no one. The water at Imraystand turned out to be a tiny spring at the back of the crevice, feeding a deep, roughly round pool, what Ruark called a tank, less than 2 paces across. Enough for herdsmen, enough for the Jindo to fill some of their water skins. No Shido went near. In Tardad Land, the Jindo had first claim on water. It seemed the goats got their moisture purely from the thick leaves of the thorny bushes. Ruark assured Rand there would be much more water at the next night's stop. Kadir produced a surprise while the wagon drivers were unhitching their teams and fetching buckets from the water wagons.
When he came out of his wagon, a dark-haired young woman accompanied him in a red silk gown and red velvet slippers more suited to a palace than to the waist. A filmy red scarf, wound almost like a shufa and veil, provided no protection from the sun and certainly did nothing to hide a palely beautiful heart-shaped face. Clinging to the peddler's thick arm, she swayed enticingly as he took her to see the blood-splashed room. Moraine and the others had gone off to where the Gaishin were erecting the Wise One's camp. When the pair came back out, the young woman shuddered delicately. Rand was sure it was pretense, just as he was sure she had asked to view that butcher's workroom. Her show of revulsion lasted all of 2 seconds, and then she was peering about interestedly at the Aiel. It appeared that Rand himself was one of the sights she wanted to see. Kadir seemed ready to take her back to the wagon, but she guided him to Rand instead, the alluring smile on her full lips plain behind her diaphanous veil.
"Adnan has been telling me of you," she said in a smoky voice.
She might have been hanging on the peddler, but her dark eyes traced Rand boldly.
"You are the one the Aiel talk of, he who comes with the dawn."
Kylie and the Gleeman came out of the second wagon and stood together at a distance, watching.
"It seems I am," he said.
"Strange."
Her smile became wickedly mischievous.
"I thought you would be handsomer."
Patting Kadir on the cheek, she sighed.
"This dreadful heat is so wearing. Do not be too long."
Kadir did not speak until she had climbed the steps back inside. His hat had been replaced by a long white scarf tied atop his head, the ends hanging down his neck.
"You must forgive Isendra, good sir. She is too forward sometimes."
His voice was mollifying, but his eyes belonged on a bird of prey. He hesitated, then went on.
"I have heard other things. I have heard that you took Kalindor out of the heart of the stone."
The man's eyes never changed. If he knew about Kalindor, he knew Rand was the dragon reborn, knew he could wield the one power. And his eyes never changed. A dangerous man.
"I have heard it said," Rand told him, "that you should believe nothing you hear, and only half of what you see." "A wise rule," Kadir said after a moment. "Yet to achieve greatly, a man must believe something. Belief and knowledge pave the road to greatness. Knowledge is perhaps the most valuable of all. We all seek the coin of knowledge. Your pardon, good sir. Isendra is not a patient woman. Perhaps we will have another opportunity to talk."
Before the man had taken 3 steps, Avienda said in a low, hard voice,
"You belong to Elaine, Randolthor. Do you stare so at every woman who comes in front of your eyes, or only those who go half naked? If I strip off my clothes, will you stare so at me? You belong to Elaine."
He had forgotten she was there.
"I don't belong to anyone, Avienda."
"Elaine? She cannot seem to make up her mind what she thinks."
"Elaine laid her heart bare to you, Randolthor. If she did not show you in the Stone of Tyr, did her 2 letters not tell you what she feels? You are hers and no others."
Rand threw up his hands and stalked away from her. At least he tried. She followed on his heels, a disapproving shadow in the sun's glare.
Swords. The Aiel might have forgotten why they did not carry swords, but they had kept the contempt for them. Swords might make her leave him alone.
Seeking out Lan in the Wise One's camp, he asked the warder to watch him work the forms. Bear was the only one of the 4 in view, and a scowl surely deepened the creases on her face. Egwene was not to be seen either. Moraine wore calm like a mask, dark eyes cool. He could not say whether she approved. He was not out to offend the Aiel, so he set up with Lan between the Wise One's tents and the Jindo's. He used one of the practice swords Lan carried in his baggage, a bundle of loosely tied laths in place of a blade.
The weight and balance were right, though, and he could forget himself in the dance-like flow from form to form, the practice sword alive in his hands, a part of him. Usually it was that way. Today the sun was a furnace in the sky, baking out moisture and strength. Avienda squatted off to one side, hugging her knees to her chest and staring at him. Finally, panting, he let his arms drop.
"You lost concentration," Land told him. "You must hold on to that, even when your muscles turn to water. Lose it, and that is the day you die. And it will probably be a farm boy who has his hands on a sword for the first time who does it."
His smile was sudden, odd on that stony face.
"Yes, well, I'm not a farm boy any longer, am I?"
They had gained an audience, if at a distance. Aiel lined the edge of both the Shido and Jindo camps. Kylie's cream-whipped bulk stood out among the Jindo, the gleeman beside her in his cloak of colored patches. Which one did he choose? He did not want them to see him watching them. "How do Aiel fight, Lan?"
"Hard," the warder said dryly. "They never lose concentration. Look here."
With his sword, he drew on the hard, cracked clay, a circle and arrows.
"I'll change tactics according to circumstances, but here is one they favor. They move in a column, divided into quarters. When they meet an enemy, the first quarter rushes in to pin them. The second and third sweep wide to either side, hitting the flanks and rear. The last quarter waits in reserve, often not even watching the battle, except for their leader. When a weakness opens, a hole, anything, the reserve strikes there. Finish."
His sword stabbed into a circle, already pierced with arrows.
"How do you beat that?" Rand asked. "With difficulty. When you first make contact, you'll not spot Aiel before they strike unless you are lucky. Immediately send out your horsemen to break up or at least delay their flanking attacks. If you keep most of your strength back and defeat the holding attack, then you can wheel on the others in turn and defeat them, too."
"Why do you want to learn how to fight Aiel?"
Avienda burst out.
"Are you not he who comes with the dawn, meant to bind us together and return us all to old glories? Besides, if you want to know how to fight Aiel, ask Aiel, not a wetlander. His way will not work."
"It has worked well enough with bordermen from time to time."
Ruark's soft boots made very little sound on the hard ground. He had a water skin under his arm.
"Allowances are always made when someone suffers a disappointment, Avienda. But there is a limit to sulking. You gave up the spear for your obligation to the people and the blood. One day, no doubt, you will be making a clan chief do what you want instead of what he wants. But if instead you are wise one to the smallest hold of the smallest sept of the Tardad, the obligation remains, and it cannot be met by tantrums."
A wise one. Rand felt a fool. Of course that was why she had gone to Roydian. But he would never have thought Avienda would choose to give up the spear. It certainly explained why she had been chosen to spy on him, though. Suddenly he found himself wondering if she could channel. It seemed Min had been the only woman in his life since that winter night who could not. Ruark tossed him the sloshing water skin. The lukewarm water slid down his throat like chilled wine. He tried not to splash any over his face, not to waste it, but it was hard.
"I thought you might like to learn the spear," Ruark said when Rand finally lowered the half-empty skin.
For the first time, Rand realized the clan chief was carrying only two spears and a pair of bucklers. Not practice spears, if there were any such. A foot of sharp steel tipped each. Steel or wood, his muscles cried out for rest. His legs wanted him to sit down, and his head wanted to lie down. Kylie and the gleeman were gone, but Aiel was still watching from both camps. They had seen him practicing with a despised sword, if a wooden one. They were his people. He did not know them, but they were his in more senses than one.
Avienda was still watching him too, glowering as though blaming him for Ruark having set her down. Not that she had anything to do with his decision, of course. The Jindo and Shido were watching. That was it.
That mountain can grow awfully heavy sometimes, he sighed, taking his spear and buckler from Ruark.
When do you find a chance to put it down a while?
When you die, Lan said simply.
Forcing his legs to move, and trying to ignore Avienda, Rand squared off with Ruark. He did not mean to die just yet. No, not for a long time yet. Leaning against a tall wheel in the shade of one of the peddler's wagons, Matt glanced at the line of Jindo watching Rand. All he could see now was their backs. The man was a pure fool, leaping about in this heat. Any sensible man would find a bit of protection from the sun, something to drink. Shifting his seat in the shade, he peered into the mug of ale he had bought from one of the drivers and grimaced. Ale just did not taste right when it was as warm as soup. At least it was wet. The only other thing he had bought, aside from the hat, was a short-stemmed pipe with a silver-worked bowl, snuggled now in his coat pocket with his tobacco pouch. Trading was not on his mind. Unless it was for passage out of the waste, a commodity the peddler's wagons did not seem to be offering at the moment. They were doing a steady business, if not for ale. The Aiel did not mind the temperature, but they seemed to think it too weak. Most were Jindo, but there was a steady stream of Shido from the other camp. Culloden and Kadir had their heads together for a long time, though they came to no agreement since Culloden left empty-handed. Kadir must not have liked losing the trade. He stared after Culloden with those hawk's eyes, and a Jindo who wanted his attention had to speak three times before he was heard. The Aiel did not show much in the way of a coin, but the peddlers and their people were quick to accept silver bowls or gold figurines or fine wall hangings looted from Tyr. And Aiel pouches produced raw nuggets of gold and silver that made Matt sit up. But an Aiel who lost at dice might well reach for his spears. He wondered where the mines were. Where one man could find gold, another could. It was probably a lot of work, though, mining gold. Taking a long drink of warm ale, he settled back against the wagon wheel. What sold and what did not, and at what price, was interesting. The Aiel were no simple fools to hand over a gold salt cellar, say, for a bolt of cloth. They knew the value of things and bargained hard, though they had their own wants. Books went immediately. Not everyone wanted them, but those who did took every last one the wagons held. Laces and velvets vanished as soon as they were brought out, for astonishing quantities of silver and gold, and ribbons for not much less. But the finest silks just lay there. Silk was cheaper in trade to the east, he overheard a Shido tell Kadir. A heavy-set, broken-nosed driver tried to talk a Jindo maiden into a carved ivory bracelet. She pulled one wider, thicker, and more ornate from her pouch and offered to wrestle him for the pair. He hesitated before refusing, which showed Matt he was even dumber than he looked. Needles and pins were snapped up, but the pots and most of the knives earned sneers. Aiel smiths did better work. Everything changed hands, from vials of perfumes and bath salts to kegs of brandy. Wine and brandy fetched good prices. He was startled to hear Hyrn ask for two rivers tobacco. The peddlers had none. One driver kept trying to interest the Aiel in a heavy gold-worked crossbow with no success. The crossbow caught Matt's eye, all those inlaid gold lions with what seemed to be rubies for eyes. Small, but still rubies. Of course, a good Two Rivers longbow could shoot 6 arrows, while a crossbowman was still cranking back the bowstring for his second shot. A longer range for a crossbow that size, though, by 100 paces. With two men doing nothing but keeping a crossbow with bolt in place in the hands of each crossbowman, and stout pikemen to hold the cavalry off. Wincing, Matt let his head fall back against the spokes. It had happened again.
He had to get out of the waste, away from Moraine, away from any Aes Sedai. Maybe back home for a while. Maybe he could get there in time to help with this White Cloak trouble. Small chance of that, unless I use the Bloody Ways, or another bloody portal stone. That would not solve his problems anyway. For one thing, there were no answers in Emmonsfield to what those snaky folk had meant about marrying the daughter of the Nine Moons, or dying and living again. Or Rudyan. Through his coat, he rubbed the silver foxhead medallion, hung around his neck again. The pupil of the fox's eye was a tiny circle split by a sinuous line, one side polished bright, the other shaded in some way. The ancient symbol of Aes Sedai before the breaking. The black-hafted spear, sword-blade point marked with two ravens, he took from where it was leaning beside him and laid it across his knees. More Aes Sedai work. Rudyan had provided no answers, only more questions, and... Before Rudyan, his memory had been full of holes. Casting back in his mind then, he would be able to remember walking up to a door in the morning and leaving in the evening, but nothing between. Now there was something in between, filling all those holes. Waking dreams, or something very like. It was as if he could remember dances and battles and streets and cities, none of which he had ever really seen, none of which he was sure had ever existed. Like 100 pieces of memory from 100 different men. Better to think of them as dreams, maybe. A little better. Yet he was as sure in them as in any of his own remembrances. Battles numbered the most, and sometimes they crept up on him in a way, as with the crossbow. He would find himself looking at a piece of ground and planning how to set an ambush there, or defend against one, or how to set an army for battle. It was madness. Without looking, he traced the flowing script carved into the black spear haft. He could read it as easily as any book now, though it had taken him the whole trip back to Cheyenne to realize it. Rand had not said anything, but he suspected he had given himself away there in Rudyan. He knew the old tongue now, sifted whole out of those dreams. Light, what did they do to me? Se souvraya, niende miseigne, he said aloud. I am lost in my own mind. A scholar for this day and age. Matt looked up to find the gleeman looking at him with dark, deep-set eyes. The fellow was taller than most, somewhere in his middle years, and likely attractive to women, but with an oddly apprehensive way of holding his head cocked, as if trying to look at you sideways. Just something I heard once, Matt said. He had to be more careful. If Moraine decided to pack him off to the White Tower for study, they would never let him out of there again. You hear scraps of things and remember them. I know a few phrases. That should cover any slips he was stupid enough to make.
I am Jason Natale, a gleeman.
Natale did not flourish his cloak the way Tom would. He could have been saying he was a carpenter or a wheelwright.
Do you mind if I join you?
Matt nodded to the ground next to him, and the gleeman folded his legs, tucking his cloak under to sit on. He seemed fascinated by the Jindo and Shido milling around the wagons, most still carrying their spears and bucklers.
Aiel, he murmured. Not what I would have expected. I can still hardly credit it.
I've been with them for weeks now, Matt said, and I don't know that I believe them myself. Odd people. If any of the maidens ask you to play Maiden's Kiss, my advice is to refuse, politely. Natale frowned at him questioningly.
You lead an intriguing life, it seems.
What do you mean? Matt asked cautiously.
Surely you do not think it is a secret. Not many men travel in company with an Aes Sedai. The woman Moraine Damodred. And then there is Randall Thor, the dragon reborn, he who comes with the dawn. Who can say how many prophecies he is supposed to fulfill? An unusual traveling companion, certainly.
The Aiel had talked, of course. Anyone would. Still, it was a little unsettling to have a stranger calmly talk about Rand this way. He suits well enough for now. If he interests you, talk to him. Myself, I'd just as soon not be reminded.
Perhaps I will. Later, perhaps.
Let us talk of you. I understand you went into Ruidian, where none save Aiel have gone in 3,000 years.
You got there?
He reached for the spear on Matt's knees, but let his hand fall when Matt drew it away slightly.
Very well. Tell me what you saw.
Why?
I am a Gleeman, Matrim.
Natale had his head cocked to one side in that uneasy manner, but his voice held irritation at having to explain. He lifted a corner of his cloak with its colorful patches as though for proof.
You have seen what none have, save a handful of Aiel. What stories can I make with the sights your eyes have seen? I will even make you the hero if you wish.
Matt snorted. I don't want to be any bloody hero. Yet there was no reason to keep silent. Amis and that lot could chatter about not speaking of Ruidian, but he was no Aiel. Besides, it might pay to have somebody with the peddlers who had a little goodwill toward him, somebody who could put in a word when it was needed. He told the story from reaching the wall of fog to coming out, leaving out selected bits. He had no intention of telling anyone else about that twisted doorway, Tirangrial, and he would rather forget the dust gathering into creatures that tried to kill him. That strange city of huge palaces was surely enough, and Avendisora. The Tree of Life, Natale passed over quickly, but he took Matt through the rest again and again, asking more and more detail. From exactly what it felt like walking through that fog, and how long it took, to the color of the shadowless light inside, to descriptions of every last thing Matt could remember seeing in the great square in the heart of the city. Those Matt gave reluctantly. A slip, and he would find himself talking about Tirangrial, and who knew where that might lead. Even so, he drained the last of the warm ale and still talked until his throat was dry. It sounded rather dull the way he told it, as though he had just walked in and waited while Rand went off, then walked out again. But Natale seemed intent on digging out every last scrap. He did remind Matt of Tom then. Sometimes Tom concentrated on you, as though he meant to wring you dry.
Is this what you are meant to be doing?
Matt jumped in spite of himself at the sound of Kylie's voice, hard under its mellifluous tones. The woman put him on edge, and now she looked ready to rip his heart out, and the Gleeman's as well. Natale scrambled to his feet.
This young man has just been telling me the most fascinating things about Ruidian. You will not believe it. We are not here for Ruidian.
The words came out as sharp as her hatchet of a nose. At least she was only glaring at Natale now.
I tell you, you tell me nothing. Do not try to silence me.
Ignoring Matt, they moved off down the wagons, arguing in low voices, gesticulating fiercely. Kylie seemed to have been browbeaten into a grim silence by the time they disappeared into her wagon. Matt shivered. He could not imagine sharing living quarters with that woman. It would be like sharing with a bear with a sore tooth. Isendra now. That face, those lips, that swaying walk. If he could get her away from Kadir, maybe she would find a young hero. The dust creatures could be 10 feet tall for her. He would give her every detail he could remember or invent. A handsome young hero more to her liking than a stuffy old peddler. It was worth thinking about. The sun slid below the horizon, and small fires of thorny branches made pools of yellow light among the tents. The smells of cooking filled the camp. Goat, roasting with dried peppers. Cold filled the camp, too. The cold of night in the waste. It was as if the sun had taken all the heat with it. Matt had never expected he would wish for a stout cloak when he packed to leave the stone. Maybe the peddlers had one. Maybe Natale would dice for his. He ate at Ruark's fire with Hiron and Rand. And Avienda, of course. The peddlers were there, and Natale close by Kylie, and Isendra all but wrapped around Kadir. It might be harder separating Isendra from the hook-nosed man than he had hoped.
or easier. Twined around the fellow or not, she had smoky eyes for Rand and no one else. You would have thought she already had his ears clipped, a sheep marked for its owner's flock. Neither Rand nor Kadir seemed to notice. The peddler hardly took his eyes off Rand. Avienda noticed and glared at Rand. At least the fire gave off some warmth. When the roast goat was finished, and some sort of flecked yellow mush that was spicier than it looked, Ruark and Hyrn filled short-stemmed pipes, and the clan chief asked Natale for a song. The gleeman blinked.
"Why, of course, of course. Let me bring a harp."
His cloak billowed on the dry, cold breeze as he vanished toward Kali's wagon. The fellow certainly was different from Tom Marilyn. Tom hardly got out of bed without flute or harp or both. Matt thumbed his silver-worked pipe full of tobacco and was puffing contentedly by the time Natale returned and struck a pose suitable for a king. That was like Tom. With a strummed chord, the gleeman began.
"Soft the winds like springtime's fingers, soft the rains like heaven's tears. Soft the years roll by in gladness, never hinting storms to come, never hinting whirlwinds ravage. Rain of steel and battle thunder, war to tear the heart asunder."
It was Midian's Ford, an old song, of Manetherin, oddly enough, and war before the Trolloc Wars. Natale did a fair job of it, nothing like Tom's sonorous recitals, of course, but the rolling words drew a crowd of Aiel thick around the edge of the fire's light. Villainous Adoman led the Seferi down an unsuspecting Manetherin, pillaging and burning, driving all before them, until King Burin gathered Manetherin's strength, and the men of Manetherin met the Seferi at Midian's Ford, holding, though heavily outnumbered, through 3 days of unrelenting battle, while the river ran red and vultures blacked the sky. On the third day, numbers dwindling, hope fading, Burin and his men fought their way across the ford in a desperate sortie, driving deep into Adoman's horde, seeking to turn the enemy back by killing Adoman himself. But forces too great to overpower swept in around them, trapping them, driving them ever in on themselves. Surrounding their king and the Red Eagle banner, they fought on, refusing surrender even when their doom became clear. Natale sang how their courage touched even Adoman's heart, and how at last he allowed the remnant to go free, turning his army back to Safair in honor of them.
"Back across the blood-red water, marching back with heads held high. No surrender, arm or sword. No surrender, heart or soul. Honor be theirs, ever after. Honor all the age shall know."
He plucked the final chord, and the Aiel whistled their approval, drumming spears on their hide bucklers, some raising ululating cries. It had not been that way, of course. Matt could remember.
"Light, I don't want to."
But it came anyway. He remembered counseling Burin not to accept the offer, being told in return that the smallest chance was better than none. Adoman, glossy black beard hanging below the steel mesh that veiled his face, drew his spearmen back, waited until they were strung out and nearly to the ford before the hidden archers rose, and the cavalry charged in. As for turning back to Safair, Matt did not think so. His last memory at the ford was trying to keep his feet waist deep in the river with 3 arrows in him, but there was something later, a fragment. Seeing Adoman, gray-bearded now, go down in a sharp fight in a forest, toppling from his rearing horse, the spear in his back put there by an unarmored, beardless boy. This was worse than the holes had been.
"You did not like the song?" Natale said.
It took Matt a moment to realize the man was speaking to Rand, not him. Rand rubbed his hands together, peering into the small fire before answering. "I'm not certain how wise it is, depending on an enemy's generosity. What do you think, Kadir?" The peddler hesitated, glancing at the woman clinging to his arm.
I do not think of such things, he said at last. I think of profits, not battles.
Kylie laughed coarsely. At least until she saw Isendra's smile, condescending to a woman who could make three of her. Then her dark eyes glittered dangerously behind those rolls of fat. Suddenly warning cries rose in the dark beyond the tents. Aiel snatched veils across their faces, and a moment later, Trollocs poured in out of the night. Snouted faces and horned heads, towering over the humans, howling and swinging scythe-curved swords, stabbing with hooked spears and barbed tridents, hacking with spiked axes. Myrdral flowed with them like deadly, eyeless snakes. A heartbeat it took, but the Aiel fought as if they had had an hour's warning, meeting the charge with their own flickering spears. Matt was vaguely aware of Rand with that fiery sword suddenly in hand, but then he was sucked into the maelstrom himself, wielding his spear as spear and quarterstaff both, slash and thrust, haft whirling. For once he was glad of those dream memories. The way of this weapon seemed familiar, and he needed every scrap of skill he could find. It was all chaotic madness. Trollocs rose up in front of him and went down to his spear, or an Aiel spear, or spun away into the confusion of shouts and howls and clanging steel. Myrdral faced him, black blades meeting his raven-marked steel with flashes of blue light like sheet lightning. Faced him, and were gone in the tumult. Twice a short spear streaking by his head took Trollocs about to run him through the back. He thrust the short sword blade into a Myrdral's chest, and knew he was going to die when it did not fall, but grinned with those bloodless lips, eyeless stare shivering fear into his bones, and drew back its black sword. An instant later, the half-man jerked as Aiel arrows pincushioned it. Jerked for the moment Matt needed to leap back from the thing as it fell, still trying to stab at him. Stab at anything. A dozen times, the spear's iron-hard black haft barely deflected a Trolloc thrust. It was Aes Sedai work, and he was glad of it. The silver fox head on his chest seemed to pulse with cold, as if to remind him that it, too, bore the mark of Aes Sedai. Right then, he did not care. If it took Aes Sedai work to keep him alive, he was ready to follow Moraine like a puppy. He could not have said if it went on for minutes or hours, but suddenly there was not a Myrdral or Trolloc still standing in sight. Though cries and howls from the darkness spoke of pursuit. Dead and dying littered the ground, Aiel and Shadowspawn, the halfmen still thrashing. Groans filled the air with pain. Suddenly he realized his muscles felt like water, and his lungs were afire. Panting, he slid down to his knees, leaning on his spear. Flames made bonfires of three of the peddler's canvas-topped wagons, one with a driver pinned to the side by a Trolloc spear, and some of the tents were burning. Shouts from the direction of the Shido camp, and glows too large for campfires, said they had been attacked too. Fiery sword still in hand, Rand came to where Matt knelt. Are you all right? Avienda shadowed him. Somewhere she had found a spear and buckler, had tucked up a corner of her shawl to veil her face. Even in skirts, she looked deadly. Oh, I am fine, Matt muttered, struggling to his feet. Nothing like a little dance with Trollocs to ready you for sleep, right, Avienda? Uncovering her sleep, she gave him a tight smile. The woman had probably enjoyed it. He was sweat all over. He thought it might freeze on him. Moraine and Egwene had appeared with two of the wise ones, Amis and Bear, circulating among the wounded. The convulsion of healing followed the Aes Sedai, though sometimes she merely shook her head and moved on. Ruark stood up with a grim face. Bad news, Rand said quietly. The clan chief grunted. Aside from Trollocs here, where they should not be, not by 200 leagues or more? Perhaps. Some 50 Trollocs attacked the Wise One's camp. Enough to overwhelm it, had it not been for Moraine Sedai and luck. However, it seems the Shido were hit by fewer than struck us. Though since they are the larger camp, the reverse should have been true.
I might almost think they were attacked only to keep them from coming to our aid. Not that that would be certain with Shido. But Trollocs and Nightrunners might not know that.
And if they knew an Aes Sedai was with the Wise Ones, Rand said, that attack could have been meant to keep her away, too. I bring enemies with me, Rourke. Remember that. Wherever I am, my enemies are never far.
Isendra poked her head out of the lead wagon. A moment later, Kadir climbed down past her, and she ducked back inside, shutting the white-painted door behind him. He stood looking around at the carnage, the light of his burning wagons painting rippling shadows across his face. The group around Matt held his attention most. The wagons seemed to interest him not at all. Natale got down from Kylie's wagon, too, speaking up the stairs to her still inside, his eyes on Matt and the others.
Fools, Matt muttered, half to himself, hiding inside the wagons as if that would make any difference to a Trolloc. They could have all roasted alive, easy as not.
They are still alive, Rand said, and Matt realized he had seen them too. That is always important, Matt, who stays alive. It's like dice. You can't win if you can't play, and you can't play if you are dead.
Who can say what game the peddlers play?
He laughed quietly, and the fiery sword vanished from his hands.
I'm going to get some sleep, Matt said, already turning away.
Wake me if the Trollocs show up again, or better, let them kill me in my blankets. I'm too tired to wake up again.
Rand was definitely going over the edge. Maybe tonight would convince Kylie and Kadir to turn back. If they did, he intended to be with them.
Rand let Moraine look at him, muttering to herself, though he had taken no wound.
With so many who had, she could not spare the strength to wash away his fatigue with the one power.
This was aimed at you,
she told him, surrounded by the moans of the injured. The Trollocs were being dragged away into the night by pack horses and the peddler's mules. The Aiel apparently intended to leave the Murdval where they lay until they stopped moving, to make sure they were really dead. The wind gusted up, like ice with no moisture in it.
Was it? He said.
Her eyes glittered in the firelight before she turned back to the wounded. Egwene came to him too, but only to say in a low, fierce whisper,
Whatever you are doing to upset her, stop it.
The glance she shot past him at Avienda left no doubt who she meant, and she went off to help Bear and Amis before he could say he had done nothing. She looked ridiculous with those two braids twined with ribbons. The Aiel seemed to think so, too. Some of them grinned at her back. Stumbling, shivering, he sought his tent. He had never been this tired before. The sword had almost not come. He hoped that was the tiredness. Sometimes there was nothing there when he reached for the source, and sometimes the power would not do what he wanted. But almost from the first, the sword had come practically without thought. Now, of all times, it had to be the tiredness. Avienda insisted on following him as far as the tent, and when he woke the next morning, she was sitting outside cross-legged, though without the spear and buckler. Spy or not, he was glad to see her. At least he knew who and what she was, and what she felt for him.